You're listening to the Live Talk with Lamb podcast hosted by me, Todd Shapiro. Okay, episode 9 with Brad Lamb. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm well, thanks. Live Talk with Lamb.
Live Talk with Lamb.
Are you enjoying these so far?
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah.
You don't mind disclosing a lot about you?
Maybe not in this group of podcasts, but I think before I've said that one of my pet peeves is when people know things, they don't want to share them. Right. I think that it's important for people that have inside track or understanding that other people don't have to try to share it and get more people educated, more people better off. So I love doing that.
You definitely did talk about that, actually. And it is nice in a way that's giving back. That's not being afraid of sharing, as you said, your knowledge. And I think a lot of people are very protective of that. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think if somebody thinks that they have an edge and they give that edge to someone else, that they might lose the edge. I never fear that someone's going to do something better than I do. I have a sufficient ego that I believe I can still be the best, even if I help other people and tell other people how to do it.
And is that partly because I think the story of you, Brad, from what I know, is you came from very humble beginnings. You've always worked very hard, and you've always sort of had within each sort of stage of your life more success. So is that part of that? And then share us that, like, tell us those, that story on how, you know, this came to be.
Well, I think it's probably because I'm delusional. That's why I think that, well, actually. But
you drive a nice car. That's not delusional. Or cars.
I started off really, really young as an entrepreneur. So I moved to Montreal when I was six.
And by yourself?
Yeah, I moved by myself. I emancipated from my parents. So I moved to Montreal from Vancouver with my two other brothers and my mom and dad.
Wait, were you born in Vancouver?
I was born in Vancouver.
I had no idea.
Yeah. No, we lived in Vancouver from, I was born in 61. And we moved the centennial year, we moved to Montreal when the big 100-year anniversary was happening. It was magical. It was a great time to be in Montreal. And I lived in a neighborhood called Beaconsfield, which is in the west part of the island of Montreal Island. And it happened to be a place where a lot of English people lived. We had this street that was L-shaped. It was called Chartwell Crescent. And it was amazing because there were so many kids my age. Like, you know, there were probably 60 kids within 3 years of me. And so we had so many friends, and we did so many things. Kick the can and tag and hide and seek and Nicky Nicky Nine Doors and all kinds of crazy games we made up. We had gangs of kids. It was so much fun. And because there were so many kids, there was an audience for me to sell stuff to. And I very naturally came to entrepreneurial ideas. I don't know why. Maybe it's my Scottish heritage, natural business person. But I started selling stuff. The Kool-Aid used to come in two packages, sugar sweetened and unsweetened. You had way more choice of flavors with the unsweetened. And I used to pay my mother to buy me the unsweetened, and I'd use her sugar to sweeten it. So the big ingredient, of course, is the sugar. And then I'd sell it for 5 or 10 cents a glass. I put a little table at the end of my driveway. I'd make a sign. I put a chair, tablecloth on it, and I would sell out all the Kool-Aid I had in the day. Because kids, they were so bored. When I was a child, my dad would say to us, get out of the house. Don't want to see you till lunch. You know, lunch was half an hour. We didn't want to be around the house too much. And he said, get out of here and don't come back till 6 or 6:30 when dinner is served. And then after dinner, you get out of here and don't come back till 9 o'clock. So we spent all our time running around with all these kids. And it was so much fun. I've got to tell you, I had a fantastic childhood. From the standpoint of independence and building ideas and bonding with people and the whole hierarchy of strength of intelligence and strength of body and you know, who was the king and who was, you know, like there was a whole hierarchy of kids, right? And you really learned how to be independent from your parents. My parents had no idea what I was doing, No
selling
idea.
The spiked Kool-Aid.
Well, I was selling stuff. They knew about that because I was close to the perimeter. I needed the supplies from the house and stuff. But but they didn't know about all the other crazy antics we were up to. I mean, crazy stuff. Being a parent now, I would be mortified if my daughter was involved in any of it. Not that it was illicit. It was just super, super dangerous.
Yeah.
Like life-threatening stuff every
climbing
day.
Climbing trees. Going down bikes on crazy hills.
Building rafts on ponds that if they sunk, we'd drown. You know, like climbing through the sewers. We'd run through all the sewers of our neighborhood. We'd pop the sewer thing because there's a new neighborhood being built outside of our neighborhood over time as a farmer's field. And that farmer's field was being turned into houses, not in the first few years, but then in the latter years, you know. And it took about 10 years to do the whole thing. And they were laying new sewers. We used to run the sewers. It's insane.
It's insane.
There was like, you know, frogs and rats and shit in those sewers. And we just ran through them like crazy. Behind us, we had a woods. On the other side of us, we had a farmer's field with a massive frog pond. Beyond the woods, we had a cemetery. Beyond the cemetery, we had a golf course. On the other side of the farmer's fields, we had a deep woods. So we had these massive playgrounds. It must have been 200 acres, 300 acres. And there were stories of, you know, the guy that ran the graveyard drove around a blue truck, he had a salt gun. And if little kids were seen on the graves playing around, he'd shoot you. So we were always like, you know, in the grass, like commandos, tormenting this guy, this poor old guy that drove the truck. You know, we climbed trees. We climbed the young trees that were like 30 feet tall. We'd grab the top of them and we'd throw ourselves off the tree. And we'd ride ourselves down to the ground and then let the tree go. That was called the bendables. We built tree forts. We had war, the two sides of the street, our side and the other side. We had slingshots with berries. And we used to have this massive berry war every summer at night. It's crazy, really crazy fun. Anyway, all of this cost exactly zero to do. It was all free fun. And I don't think an amusement park or Disneyland could have compared to what we did. Like the memories of all that stuff and the independence of running wild and just doing what you wanted to do and no fear of any bad things happening to you.
Not to interrupt, because I mean, I love hearing this stuff. Did this help you appreciate like a dollar? Because you didn't need a dollar to enjoy this fun. You didn't need to be a trust fund baby to go out and have fun and get things. So when did you go, well, wait, I'm doing this all for free. It's the best experiences of my life, but there's ways to capitalize on some of this stuff.
Well, I'll tell you, so I think all that stuff made me very independent of my parents. Like I never really relied on my parents for advice. I kind of used myself as my sole advisor. I think that's part of that. Mm. But what happened with all these kids was we were thirsty and hungry and you know, and we were banned from our houses, right? So I saw all these consumers, potential consumers, and in the end, sometimes we got bored. And, you know, we'd already frog ponded and, you know, rode our bikes to the Arboretum 30 miles away. Our parents had no idea what we were doing. And I started to think about ways to make money because my dad was really smart about this. My dad was a cheap, cheap guy. Like he was a really generous man in many ways, but he didn't like spending money. And he gave me in those days, I got $2 a month allowance. Now, the other kids are getting $10 or $12. I got $2.25. Brett, my older brother, got $2.50, and my younger brother got $2. Now, fair enough, you could get a bag of candy for a quarter in those days, but it wasn't enough money to have any fun. So I was like, I got to get money. So I started to do the Kool-Aid thing. I'd buy popsicles, you know, the ones that they have the two sides, so you cut them in the half. So I'd buy them from the store in bulk. We had a bulk freezer in the garage. I'd put like dozens in the freezer, and I'd cut them up, and I'd sell them. I'd sell them for 5 or 10 cents a half. I also made ice cream sandwiches. I bought Graham wafers and white ice cream and cut them into cubes and made a sandwich, put them in the freezer. They got all soft because the ice cream and the Graham cracker kind of molded together into a soft, chewy, and they sold like hotcakes, literally. I caught snakes in the forest. We had gardener snakes, whatever those snakes are called. Harmless snakes. I mean, they bite, but it doesn't hurt. And I'd catch them, and I would do a snake charming show. Now, I knew nothing about snake charming, but it didn't matter because kids were so bored. I'd line up bricks. I'd have the snake slither through the bricks. You know, I'd swing them around. I'd do all kinds of things with the snakes. Never killed the snakes, and always let the snakes go or they escaped in the end. But I'd charge 10 cents or 25 cents for the snake charming show. I found one day I was rooting through the basement of my parents' house. I found this big box with a film projector and a bunch of homemade movies. Mostly of my dad when he was in his 20s, smoking cigarettes, drinking beer, and talking to girls that weren't my mom. And so I played those for the kids, movies, and I had movie day, and I get 25 kids in at a quarter apiece, and I'd, sometimes 10 cents, sometimes a quarter, and I made money that way. And then I also did other things. I planned a fair one year, a single day fair.
How old would you have been when you planned a fair for
10.
This neighborhood? 10 years old.
10, yeah. And my brother was 12 or 13, my older brother, and I enlisted him. I built a go-kart with my best friend. And I remember my dad was super busy. He's a pilot. And he wasn't there all the time. But when he's there for stretches, you know, because they get breaks. One day he comes downstairs in the basement, and I'm building this go-kart with my friend Thomas. And his dad had given us the basic ideas on how to, you know, support the axle to the 2x4 for the wheels to go and stuff. And my dad looks and goes, "What the fuck is that piece of shit you're building?" He goes, "Who told you how to build a go-kart like that? Get out of the way." And then he helped us build the best go-kart you could ever imagine. I mean, he was drilling through metal bolts with his metal drill, and this thing was a tank. It was the best go-kart anywhere. We used to race around with it. You know, one of us would push it. So we got my brother to push it for free. We just gave him free popsicles. We charged 25 cents a ride. Kids got in the go-kart until he gassed out. Then the next guy got in, he'd rest a bit, and he'd do another one. And there were no prizes to win, but kids were bored. They'd pay for the stuff. Mr. Freezies were a great thing. You could get them for about a cent a piece in large quantities. You know, you cut them because they came in like a roll. You cut them, you freeze them. We charge 5 cents for those. Make, you know, 400%, 500% profit. It's crazy.
Did you think about it that way at
that
age?
Yeah, totally.
I knew my
price. I knew how to mark it up. I knew the margins. I knew all that. Yeah.
And can you teach that, or is that innate, or is it both?
Well, I was the only one doing it.
Yeah. No one tried to, you know, take some of your market share away from you.
I was like the guy in the neighborhood that sold stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You know, I sold lots of stuff. I mean, anything I could.
Great
sell.
Great friend.
I sold old toys that we had. You know, I sold my brother's toys. So I did anything I could. I was very interested in the idea of selling, you know. What does it take to get you to pay for a service? So I was very intrigued by that as a kid. And I was the richest kid in my neighborhood.
Did you already have the thought to reinvest when you made some money to know it didn't stop there? Because that's what we've learned about you over doing these.
Yeah, I would buy, once I had made money in the freezies, I'd double up my order. I was very good at knowing where the price was too much and they wouldn't buy it. And I'd back it off and really measure sort of the economy, that whether kids would pay 10 cents for a half a free or a freezie instead of five. You know, the thing with all that was I never made enough money to be satisfied because I had bigger goals. So then what I did was I started doing contracts for snow plowing, snow blowing, and lawns. And then I bought a specialty gun on a hose that you put the special soap in. I started cleaning people's aluminum siding. I did that around my neighborhood. Just knock on the door.
What age is this about?
12.
12. So you just keep, as you get a little bit bigger and smarter and stronger, these are tasks you can now do.
Yeah, and then I watched something on TV about, they were showing how you could buy peepholes and doors. So I went to the hardware store. I rode my bike to the hardware store, and they were selling peepholes. And all a peephole is basically it's two pieces that are threaded, and you just have to slide them through a hole in the door. So I got my dad's drill, got the drill for the right size for the peephole, and I just started knocking on doors saying, "You want a peephole?" Because, you know, it was getting more dangerous.
That was huge in those days. I remember, like, every door had one of those, like, they all started to come around the 70s. Yeah, I remember that.
So peephole cost about 90 cents, and I'd sell them for $5.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, so I did peepholes. So I did all those kind of things, and it still, to me, wasn't enough. I wanted more. I wanted to do more. So I got a job at 15 at the local Steinbergs, which was like a Dominion.
So humble beginnings, a natural-born business person, always wanting to evolve, but I think wanting more. But the drive, how do you explain the drive? Because I think that's something that people can't grasp at times, because it's easy to get complacent. And I'm not necessarily saying lazy, but just, you know, accepting what your position or what you have in life, and as opposed to always wanting to do more.
I also, at the same time, competed sports at a very high level. I played hockey, played all-star hockey. I was a very good long-distance runner. I was, even at 12 years old, I had a gym in my basement. I was working out all the time to try to be super fit. I played soccer or football, as they call it. I was a very good competitive swimmer. You know, in the summers, I in Montreal, from 8 to 16 or 8 to 15, in the summers, I went swimming at 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock on swim team, 12 o'clock to 1 o'clock every day, every single day except weekends. So your Monday to Fridays are kind of screwed up because you're always swimming, right? So I just, as a person, I like being busy and I like challenges and I'm very, very naturally competitive. I think that's me, but it doesn't mean that people can't take a bit of it, you know, be more active and more, you know, try to improve their lives by being a bit more active and thinking a bit more out of the box and how can I do things differently.
So you have the je ne sais quoi. I think I said that right. Can that be taught? Can, if there's people listening going, I want to do more, I want to work hard, I feel like I'm a natural born business person, or is that just something, Brad, do you think that you either have or you don't?
I think there's levels of it, right? So I'm probably, from that personality standpoint, I'm probably 100% that personality. Can you take someone that naturally doesn't really want to do that stuff and kind of shine a light on it? Let me tell you this story. So my two brothers weren't really interested in the stuff that I was doing with that. One day I came home when I was around 10. This is another job I had. When they were building houses in our neighborhood.
A lot of turnaround at the 10 age, at the 10 mark for
well,
you.
Well, I did it for when you're 7, you're kind of too young, 8, 9. So around 9 or 10, I started getting into the stuff. And I carried it on for quite a while. But I'll tell you, this particular job ended abruptly, and I'll tell you why. So I had a red wagon, and there was a new neighborhood being built on the other side of us. Where the farmer's field was. He'd sold it to a nasty real estate developer that was ruining our playground. That's how I saw it at the time. Isn't that funny? They were building his houses, and I noticed when I was playing in all the houses, there's a lot of pop bottles, glass pop bottles hanging around. I'm like, we used to go to this place called the bakery to buy candy, and they give you 5 cents or 10 cents a bottle. They're leaving the bottles around. I took my red wagon, and for weeks, I would go and I'd load up on bottles. I'd get like 50 to 100 every day. And I'd say to my mom, can you take me to the bakery? She'd drive me to the bakery. I'd cash them in. I'd get like 10 bucks, which is a fortune because like 25 cents, I could get a massive bag of candy. And I would do that every week. My brother, I don't know how he missed this, but one day he's like, where are you getting all this money from? I said, I'm doing the bottle thing. He goes, what's the bottle thing? Well, I take my wagon to the construction site and I take the bottles. He goes, can I do that with you? Split the money? I'm like, absolutely. So we did it together. The one and only time I did it with my brother. And we went into a house and there was this guy hanging around. And he goes, what are you kids doing here? And he said, we're looking for bottles. He goes, oh yeah? There's some bottles in the basement. And by the way, I can do this for you on other houses too. So my brother goes, great. He goes downstairs with them and I'm upstairs getting the bottles. And the guy's in the corner getting bottles. He goes, listen, I can get you lots of bottles and Breckles. That's fantastic. He goes, but there's just one thing I need you to do for me. And he goes, yeah, sure, what? He pulled his pants down and pulled out his thing. And my brother screamed and ran up the stairs, grabbed my hand and said, we got to go. I'm like, no, man, what are you talking about? There's a gold mine of bottles in here. And he just said, shut up. And he grabbed me and he dragged me away. And we never told our parents that. Which is, little kids don't do that. They don't tell their parents when stuff like that happens. So I never went back and did any bottle hunting again. And my thinking about it, my brother maybe might have saved me from, because I was much smaller than him, right?
Yeah.
He was a bigger kid at that time. He was 3 years older. Might have saved me from something terrible happening if I kept going to those houses.
Jeez, man. That's.
But anyway, the story
no,
about
I
it
know.
Is...
No, I know. That's just... Sorry, you shook me. I mean, that's insane that that happened. Let's go find that guy and pummel him. But
here's the thing. I was doing this in my family, and it took them many, many months to say, what's going on? So some people just are kind of wired for that stuff, and others aren't. My brother found out the opportunity and said, I want to do it. It didn't go well because of that scenario, but still, I think people can learn from this if they see it's happening. They don't know what's happening.
That story aside, and you know, I think everyone appreciates your candidness, and sorry to hear that you and your brother had to go through that. You have this money now. You're collecting money at every age and every stage of your life. Do you use this for material things? Are you buying things for yourself? Are you getting a cool shirt or a stylish hat at the time? Or are you just doing it because you're entrepreneurial and you always wanted just to kind of have some security with, you know, finances?
Well, I'm naturally a squirrel. that's also part of my mental framework.
Your dad.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So I buy things. I don't necessarily enjoy that I buy them, but I enjoy that I've squirreled them away. Like, I have too many watches. I have too many cars. I have too much real estate that I'll never do anything with. But I feel better doing it because I'm a squirrel. I guess I'm always afraid that I'll have nothing. And that my dad drilled that into my head. But he drilled it into my other brother's heads too. Because my personality is what it is, I took what my dad said to me probably more to heart than they did. I'm going to continue developing and buying real estate. And we started a hotel brand. We're going to do a bunch of hotels in Canada. We're going to do some probably tipper, some house building. I think we'll do some of that. I plan on starting a movie production company. We're producing one right now as a partner. Please don't call me with scripts or ideas. I don't do that, please. I'm starting a food farming company. I own a bunch of farms, and we're going to get into that too. And I have a capital company that invests in great ideas. And we have a bunch of companies we've invested in that are great ideas, risky ideas, but great ideas. I also have this dream. I don't know why. I want to start a liquor company. I want to bring out a specialty rum. And that's kind of what I'm thinking.
You love
about.
Your dark rum, right?
I like dark rum, yeah. And I don't think there's any really well-branded dark rum. So I want to be that guy.
I asked that question. You list, you know, 7 or 8 things, and it's very clear that from Brad Lamb just grabbing, you know, whether it's Freezies or popsicle sticks and slicing them in two or adding sugar to Kool-Aid, you keep doing that. I think it is innate in you. And I think for people listening, and you know, listen, I'm one of those people listening, even though I'm asking you the questions, it is inspiring. So thanks for sharing that. I think it's really cool that you're open about your past.
I think that if someone can take a little bit of that and realize that a lot of people are intimidated by, I can't do it. The barriers of entry are too high. My attitude's always been, fuck it. I'm going to do it. And I just do it. I just start it and I do it. And I figure it out, you know? It's like any business. Someone started from zero somewhere, right?
And you mentioned something earlier that really resonated personally, which was not taking advice. I haven't taken advice well from people. I usually, you know, I'm the first to get defensive and tell them that you're wrong. And I remember my own father, for example, one of the investments I made was buying land in Turks and Caicos, and I wanted to buy 8 lots. And he convinced me to really only take 1, but he was trying to tell me to take none because it was risky business over there. And I remember regretting taking his advice. Had I bought all 8, which I could have done at the time with a loan, they would have been, you know, I flipped the 1 I had for almost triple the investment. I could have done that for all 8 or probably even still held 1 today because of it. So I think that's important. Trust your gut sometimes. You don't need to take advice from people. And I always question those who give advice, what have they done as well?
If the person giving you advice has done it, then I think it's decent to listen to or good to listen to. But if the person's giving advice has achieved nothing in their life, it's irrelevant. It's absolutely irrelevant. A lot of people tell me
it's their own fear almost at times, telling you not to do it.
Yeah. And you can just look at why they're where they're at because that's their attitude, right? So I think you really have to trust your gut.
Excellent. Well, thanks for sharing, Brad.
Thank you.
If you have any questions for us, please hit us up at info@lamdevcorp.com. That's info@lamdevcorp.com. If you enjoy listening to Live Talk with Lamb, make sure to like, comment, and subscribe. Thanks.